veteran
and his emotional support Canadian
scream into the void about the Mormon Church. If you want to reach us, we are on Instagram at NotSoPeterPriesthood.
And you can email us at NotSoPeterPriesthood@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy!
Bye! Trying to help the 7-year-old with Lego, and he's playing on the floor, and I was like, god damn it, that's really far to get down there. Like, why not on the coffee table? And he fully does like a monk squat, like down squatting. Yeah. Yeah. Like his little butt hovering, and I'm like, like, you can tell I was like pregnant with him in the womb while teaching yoga, because like that kid, oh.
Well, we're going to, listeners don't know that this is our second try trying this. We had a technical difficulties and we, anyway.
Jake doesn't have coffee. It's a whole thing today, guys.
Yeah, it's a great morning. he has coffee. He just does not have creamer and I'm not drinking black coffee. So here we are.
What's wrong with black coffee? What are you saying?
I have joy in my soul. I don't have a black heart.
What's wrong with me? Also, maple syrup. Put some maple syrup in your coffee. Oh. Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so good.
I do have maple syrup. Do but, you? Yeah, anyway.
That's beside the point. Okay.
We're too far in now, Dusty, so I gotta...
You got the tree. It's fine.
That would have been nice when we weren't recording. Oh, Dusty suddenly has all the ideas when we're not, when we're recording, and then when we're not. Oh, Jake can't get away from the... It's fine. And I'm slightly hungover. So, you know, it's great. We're a great pair today.
We should have a podcast for sure.
Yeah. Why did we decide to record today? I don't know. Anyway.
I've been so sick for so fucking long.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
My God. I still sound kind of like... But at least I'm not like coughing my soul out of my body at this point. It's been bad.
It was bad.
I have kids. Definitely have kids.
Probably like, yeah, this bitch is always sick. Anyway.
Always sick. My children touch everything and then cough directly into my eyeballs. Great.
We're also going to tread very carefully, not make any sudden movements because my computer was doing weird shit earlier. So, so before we get into what we're going to talk about, and you don't know what we're talking about, so I got to extend that for a little bit longer. We have Corrections Corner from our episode on transgender people. If you haven't listened to it, it's, I think, episode 130, a couple episodes back. I had said some things about Riley Gaines and Leah Thomas, and I had said that that Riley Gaines had lost to Leah Thomas and she didn't. They tied for fifth place. That was the thing I was talking about. And then I was also saying that they were taking away Leah Thomas is a transgender woman who is Olympic swimming. She is not being her medals are not being taken away so right. by the NCAA, but Riley Gaines is suing the NCAA and all that stuff. And she is a terrible human. She's very much a spokesperson against trans people. And she's made it her mission to constantly target and attack them and not realizing the repercussions that it has on it, as we talked about it, with like that it's all centered on misogyny, and it's not just about their biological sex. It's about it's a roundabout way to get to women, and she doesn't realize that she's chopping off her own arm, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What is that saying? Cutting off your nose to spite your face?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so there's Corrections Corner. Sorry, it's been a bit. Yeah, so that's, there it is.
Thank you for sending in your corrections in such a respectful manner. We appreciate it. We always want to be corrected.
Yes.
I just want to be yelled at.
Yeah.
I mean, Jake might, but that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Another. This is not After Dark. I should.
It is broad daylight.
It is broad daylight. Doesn't matter.
It's always broad daylight, I feel like.
All right. So, are you ready for the joy that I have for you today?
I mean, do I have a choice? Oh, no, I'm going through a tunnel.
There's a documentary on, it's basically like a news report on a group called the 2x2s. And, ooh, I love that you don't know what they are. Oh,
I have no idea.
I'm so happy. I had no idea who they were either. They're very...
I'm a daughter of a carpenter, so a 2x2, I know what that is. But yeah, yeah. I didn't know there was a group called that.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, cool. All right, so... I was like...
The joy in your face right now. I'm like, what is happening here? I mean, I can fill a book with things I don't know.
Well, it seems like every time I bring up like a cult, you're like, oh yeah, I've heard about them. And you're like, oh. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. They were news to me. Just like the fucking maple syrup bestie. You'd keep secrets from me. And then you're just like, oh yeah, I knew about them. I'm like, oh, cool. This whole time I didn't know that was a thing that I could do or that was a thing that you knew.
In my defense, I know a lot of weird shit. That's like not helpful in day to day life. So I don't spill that around very often. People think I'm like a freak enough as it is.
I feel that shit and just let it out. And then we'll be like, oh, yeah, Dusty's weird, but she knows. Weird shit. Two by twos. Come back to that. All right. So they're also known as the Truth and the Way. This is from Wikipedia. I'm going to get a lot of my information from there. There's not a lot of information about them. That's why I was like, And then I kept thinking this report where I'm going to talk about, and I don't want you to be Googling stuff, 2x2s and stuff. You just listen. Okay. Yeah.
I put my teeth
right away. I saw that. I saw you looking. Let me have this moment, Dusty.
I was just looking for the CBS report to see if I could send you the link. It's fine. I'm done. Look, see, my hand.
You have to make me look like a bad guy because I...
you were just going to help me. You could like sneakily be like, oh, I have the link right here. Never mind. I was trying to help you. I'm just going to hold my coffee.
You can help me do that, but don't be Googling other stuff. Oh,
you just come. I'm holding my coffee.
Fine. I don't want to now.
We are unhinged today. Oh my god. Yeah.
I think this was be a good episode. All right. So they're an international home-based Christian new religious movement that has its origin in Ireland.
In Ireland.
Yeah, at the end of the 19th century. I know, weird. The church has no official name. Among members, the church is more usually referred to as the Truth, or Meetings, or the Workers and Friends.
What?
Yeah, oh, it gets weird. Those outside the church referred to as 2x2s, the Black Stockings, No Name Church, Cooneyites, Workers and Friends, or Christians Anonymous. The church's registered names include Christian Conventions in the United States, Assemblies of Christians, and the Alberta Society of Christian Assemblies in Canada, which was dissolved only after it was exposed, the Testimony of Jesus in the United Kingdom, Krishna I Sverige, I definitely, in Sweden, and I don't speak Swedish, okay? Sorry. Uh-huh.
Who does, really? People in Sweden, that's it.
Yeah, and United Christian Conventions in Australia. These organization names are used only for registration purposes and are not used by members. The church was founded in 1897 in Ireland by William Irvine, an evangelist with an interdenominational faith mission. Irvine began independently preaching a return to the method of itinerant ministry he claimed was set forth in Matthew 10, which was like, they shall go forth 2x2. That's where they get their names. So Church growth was rapid, spreading outside Ireland. I thought it was interesting, like the 2x2, because that's the whole reason like missionaries go out in,
yeah,
just,
in,
you
pairs.
Know,
yeah, on the front splits.
Church, this is the whole church centered around that. And
does
other
it have anything to do with the animals in Noah's Ark? That felt like a really dumb question. We might need to edit that out.
What do you mean by that?
The animals,
oh, 2x2.
Hurrah, hurrah.
All right, we're going to move on with that. Right. I'm just kidding.
I have been solo parenting for 10 days, so it's, my brain is melted. It's fine. Everything's fine.
So Irvine began preaching a new order in which the hierarchy that had developed within the church would have no placement. This teaching became controversial within the church and led to his expulsion by church overseers around 1914. One of the church's most prominent evangelists, Edward Cooney, was expelled a decade after Irvine. The church then became less visible to outsiders for the next half century. Publication of several articles and books, increased news coverage, and the appearance of the internet have since opened the church to wider scrutiny. Just like, you know, our church, the Mormon church, that, you know, there's more scrutiny over the...
Yeah, because you can actually get information shared over the entire world.
Yeah. Some in the church claim it is a direct continuation of the first century Christian church. So while we're doing this, think of like the similarities too. They Mormons think that they're a direct continuation, that they have the priesthood directly from Jesus, but like through Peter, James, and John, that they appeared to Joseph and whatever. Anyway, yeah. Others in the church believe that a restoration of some sort may have occurred in the late 19th century. Does that not sound familiar? Church ministers are itinerant and work in groups of two, hence the name 2x2s. Members hold regular weekly worship gatherings in local homes on Sunday and midweek.
Oh, so yeah. It's like a home-based. I think you said that already, and I didn't catch it.
Oh, yeah, and I left that blank for... blew right past that on purpose because we're going to get into that. But if you can think of the repercussions of having home-based church meetings where there are...
the Duggars? What? The Duggar family? They have a home-based church.
I thought it said Juggers. I was so confused. Anyway. Like Boop? I don't
know. Boop. The Boobers.
Boobers.
Which I'm going to call my religion.
Let's see. So the church also holds annual regional conventions and public gospel meetings. Baptism by immersion is performed by one of the church's workers is required for full participation. That's all. The Orthodox Christian Trinitarian doctrine is rejected, and members deny having a church name. So it's very interesting because you know how obsessed Mormons are with their church name. These guys are obsessed with not having a name.
So they call it going to church?
They call it 2x2s or the truth or meetings or the workers and friends, remember? That was like 2 minutes ago.
Like, they deny having a name. That's so weird to me.
Yeah, I think they reject structure. They don't want. They didn't think Jesus's church needed structure like now. So
like a particular building or a set of rules or.
Yeah. Which I mean, to be honest, that's kind of what. Sorry, my computer. Let's see. Hold on.
Yeah. Like Jesus was kind of like a hippie that taught in the fields, right? Yeah.
Right. Okay. Oh. I'm gonna have to edit now. God damn it, I hate doing that. Sorry, give me a second. It rigged me. Okay. All right.
I'm taking notes because I have lots of questions.
Well, you can interrupt with questions.
Some of them you're answering as you're going, so I'm just writing them down. So I'm not like, so you're like, oh, I'm going to answer that. Hold on.
All Okay. All right. let's see. Where was I? Doctrine of the Church. Oh, yeah. Doctrine of the Church teaches that salvation is reached by attending the group's home meetings, accepting the preaching of its itinerant, unsalaried ministry workers, and professing. I don't know what professing is, like a testimony, basically.
Right. Okay, so you're probably going to answer this, but I have to ask it. Is there like a curriculum that they preach from? Is there any sort of like consistency within?
No.
Oh.
And I probably will get into that, but.
Okay. I figured you might, but.
Yeah.
Because if they're just like doing their own thing and they don't have like a. It kind of feels.
It's not like a church fan book. It feels very loosey-goosey, right?
You can just do whatever the fuck you want and say you're part of this. It's a religious. I got bad feelings.
Yep. All right. So, whereas some Christian sects believe in salvation by faith alone, the 2x2s teach that salvation is not achieved through faith alone, but achieved only through a combination of faith and works. A lot of their works, like, a lot of their teachings sound so similar to Mormons. Like, it's literally like taking Mormons and just putting them in homes, you know? Like, it's just... And it makes me think of home teaching, like the guys coming to your house to teach a lesson. It's basically the same thing, except in this case, that's your actual church, and you have like a group of people. Your whole congregation is meeting at these homes. The congregation is like 20 to 30 people, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
And families, so it's like the whole families are in one house to listen to two people. And from what I gathered from the documentary was there was like the 2x2s, the guys that would go around, and we'll get into the hierarchy a little bit. There's structure.
Oh, there's structure.
Thing. Oh, they travel like the country. They like to travel they'll travel like a certain area. It's like the missionaries, like they'll just travel a certain area and go like to these homes that they know are the in their faith or whatever. And I'm just like, how do they know? Like, if they have
like
no structure,
we're on the same
page. Like, they don't have record. Do they have records of like who these people are and like how they, or do they just show up at your house one day and be like, hey, we're from the 2x2s. Let's have a church meeting. I don't know. That part, I don't know. It's murky. I have no idea how that works.
I'm so uncomfortable with this whole existence of this thing.
Ugh. Oh, it's fun. Also, okay, works are considered acts of self-denial, such as wearing modest skirts and long hair in a bun, or attending all meetings regardless of how far away they are. The church does not do any outreach programs or encourage its members to participate in charities. So modesty, and also you probably hear word of mouth. Oh, this is where we're going to go meet for this church meeting. Just travel there. And then the long hair in a bun, they showed pictures of it on the documentary, and these women are just like in long skirts and they got a bun. They kind of look a little bit fundamentalist, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, because you're not allowed to cut your hair in the fundamentalist either, right?
Yeah. But I don't know. The women they seemed very fundamentalist now that I think about it. Very fundy. All right. So the church claims no official headquarters or official publications. The church does not explicitly publish any doctrinal statements, claiming these must be orally imparted by its ministers, referred to as workers. So we'll get to the. Let me just tell you the structure real quick. So their hierarchy is the. This is a little different than the documentary, but I'll tell you the difference. So overseers are the very top. So you got like a bunch of the church leadership. They're called overseers. And you got the ministers, who are also called the workers, and they're unpaid itinerant ministers traveling in pairs, and they must remain unmarried and celibate. And so very much like supposedly are the Mormons missionaries that are supposed to be unmarried and celibate. But we And then there's elders that are part of the congregation and friends that are part of the congregation. In the documentary, they just called the elders and friends members. And so I think that so that the biggest group is the members, and then you got the ministers and then the overseers.
Right. So the elders are probably like fathers of families, I would guess, that have like permission to teach in their homes would be my guess, just looking at it.
Probably for their the only thing I can think of is like retired minister, the retired
ministers,
ones that just don't travel anymore. So they
maybe. Maybe you become they allow you to get married eventually. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation with this because there just isn't a lot of information about who they are. It's hymn book and various other materials for internal use are produced by outside publishers and printing firms. Printed invitations and advertisements for its open gospel meetings are the only written materials which those outside the church are likely to encounter. Crazy, huh? So in 1890s...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
It's just wild to me that in 2024, like, we don't know anything about an organization. That's just wild to me.
Yeah. Well, and I think a big part of it is they aren't, like, they're registered as a church, but they just aren't, like, they don't have structure. Like, there's no
like, you can't Google them and go find them.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
So it's, like, this, like, ghosty church. I don't know. It's just so, like,
super
they
weird.
Could be like your neighbor that's just like,
and you would never know because they're not gonna, like, it doesn't seem like they proselytize to like the general public.
No, they're not interested in church growth. They're just interested in like having these meetings.
Weird.
I don't know. In 1896, William Irvine was sent from Scotland to Southern Ireland as a missionary by John George Govan's Faith Mission, an interdenominational organization with roots in the Holiness Movement. Because his mission was successful, he was promoted to superintendent of Faith Mission in Southern Ireland. Within a few months of his arrival in Ireland, Irvine was already disillusioned with the Faith Mission. There was friction over its holiness teachings, and Irvine saw its organization as a violation of its concept as a faith-based ministry. Above all, Irvine was increasingly intolerant of the Faith Mission's cooperation with the other churches and clergy in the various communities of Southern Ireland regarding converts who joined churches as lost among the clergy. This thing's been around since almost around as long as the Mormon Church.
Yeah. That's
weird to me. Like,
and like the Mormon Church is like has their huge temples and their own website and an Instagram. It's just wild to me.
Yeah. In 1897, he began preaching independently, proclaiming that true ministers must have no home and take no salary. He became convinced that he had received this as a special revelation he referred to as his Alpha Message. So
Alpha.
His first vision, Alpha Message,
right.
Opposed to all other established churches, he held that the manner in which the Gospels disciples had been sent out in Chapter 10 of the Gospel of Matthew was a permanent commandment which must still be observed. We've already kind of talked about that, but in October 1897, Irvine was invited by NENAGH. I don't know what that is. A businessman, John Jack Carroll, to preach in Carroll's hometown of Rathmullion. Is this fantasy? What the hell? All right. There he held a series of mission meetings in which all established churches were rejected and Irvine's new doctrine and method of ministry were set forth. So it goes on, like, we've already talked about, he's kind of the founder, but then also Edward Cooney, because they called him the Cooneyites, got lost for a little while, and then Edward Cooney took it back up. He was an influential evangelist from the Church of Ireland, and George Walker, an employee of the Cooney family's fabric business, all of whom eventually sold all and joined the new movement as itinerant preachers. Unlike later secret initially the church was in the public eye, with questions about it being raised in the British Parliament beginning in 1900. Inspired by speakers such as Irvine and Cooney, membership growth was rapid. Rather than adding members to established denominations was the practice of the Faith Mission outreach, churches began noticing their congregations thinning after exposure to the 2x2 missions. Clerics soon began regarding the 2x2 preachers as inimical to the membership of the church. After receiving reports from Ireland, the Faith Mission in 1900 formally disassociated itself from Irvine and any of its workers found to be participating in the new 2x2 movement. Oh, anyway, we don't have to get into all their history, but like, let's see. So they were, the requirement to sell all was no longer mentioned in sermons in 1904. So they had to like, these ministers had to just like sell everything and just start like walking around preaching.
How do they survive? Like, how do you?
Well, they had the stuff they, you know, they probably were given money too by the people that like.
That's true. They probably fed them and put them up.
Yeah.
It's just wild to me.
Yeah. Weekly home meetings began to be held and presided over by the elders. So the elders preside over the meetings, who were typically the householder. That's the elder. So during the next few years, this change became universal. The church continued to grow rapidly and held regular annual conventions lasting several weeks at a time. Can you imagine? Ugh. It's like general conference for weeks. Irvine traveled widely during this period. Beginning in 1906, unwelcome attention came from in the form of leaflets and billboard notices. W.D. Wilson, an English farmer whose unmarried children had left home and joined the 2x2s, began publishing articles stating girls were being recruited by the church for immoral purposes. In response, Edward Cooney brought a widely publicized suit for libel that was resolved by a settlement between the parties by the end of 1913.
Oh, so trafficking young women. Where have we heard of that before?
We're gonna. So there's a lot of that stuff. There's an Australian overseer, John Hardy, was the first to break with Irvine and excluded him from his speaking at the South Australia Convention in late 1913. So there's been like breakoffs or whatever, but they're still basically the same. Just like, oh, I'm gonna do it better. I'm gonna do it a different way, but it's still the same. So a lot of like, anyway. Oh, it was 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes was the...
Oh, I love 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
I used to watch it every Sunday. Is that when it came on? Sundays?
Their big thing is the hymnal. Like, they're huge on their hymns for some reason. And, like, they show them, like, singing their hymns, and it sounds so creepy because it's, like, it sounds like Mormon church, too. But, like...
it sounds so creepy. I love it so much.
All right, so this is what I really wanted to get into. So if you can think of like the repercussions and the implications of having strange men come into your home and with you have children around, and these men get to sleep over.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think is going to happen? So you got prime breeding ground for predators. So
many red flags.
Yeah.
So many red flags.
The FBI is actually investigating them now. So this is from from June 4th. Is that really recent? So this is all new stuff from June 14th this year. So
my birthday.
Oh, hey. this is the FBI investigating 2x2 religious sect operating in Bay Area following alleged child sex abuse. The FBI is investigating a religious sect that's facing widespread allegations of child sex abuse. They're called the 2x2s, or the Church with No Name, and there's a following here in the Bay Area. They go on to tell more about the church, but it's a very persuasive type of religion, said a former member, Michael Day. They use fear and manipulation. They manipulate people in the fear of the Lord to control people, said Lynette Barrage Flanagan, another former member. They tell you we are the only true way, which does not sound familiar. Yeah. 2x2s are often referred to today as the truth by its followers. According to the ministry's doctrine, this is the only way to find true salvation, which also sounds familiar. The narrow and straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're being truthful, Sierra asked. That's the... I don't know who that is. Oh, the the reporter. Okay. Do you think they're being truthful? Sierra asked. No, they're not, said Flanagan, a former member who says members of her family were victims of child sex abuse. I'm just broken. I could cry right now. It makes me sick. His type was small-framed brunette girls, said another former member, Sherry Autry, who identifies as a survivor of child sex abuse. In February, the FBI announced it was investigating the ministry and seeking victim information following allegations of child sex abuse reported across the U.S. Victim advocacy organizations report allegations across the world. If they didn't talk to God's true people, his chosen people, they're going to hell, Autry said. She was told by members of the ministry it was brainwashing from such an early age. What specifically do they do? They make you scared. They make it a scary place to leave. The church generally operates inside the private homes of members where worship services are held on Wednesdays and Sundays. They go two by two. That's where we get the name, said Sherry Kropp, a former member and author of a biography on the religious sect. Kropp explains the hierarchy. We've already talked about it. Overseers at the top, ministers, workers, and then elders and friends at the bottom. The preachers were to be celibate. So we're going to talk about Lynette and Laura Lee. I actually do remember workers, if they stayed with us, they would stay in our room, said Lynette Barrage Flanagan. She says her cousin Laura Lee Brown was sexually abused by another member at the age of 9 until she was 13. The reporter asked, were the parents aware of this? No. Was there an effort to report the abuse? No. Why do you think that is? I think that they wanted to keep it a secret because I think that they believe if you tarnish their perfect way, the perfect will, that will look bad on them. And they talked about that in the 60 minutes report, is that she's talking to a survivor of, and she's left the church and everything. And a big reason, like, parents would know, or they would not, you know, they would know that something was happening, but they couldn't do anything about it because they didn't want to tarnish their name.
Of course, just, yeah.
And so you have these guys that's like, oh, well, they're probably doing what God told them to do. You know, like, they're not, like, they would protect the men, not the children.
Of course not. Oh, my God. I hate this so much. I feel my blood starting to boil.
Yeah.
You fucking touch my child, I will rip your face off. Like... Yeah. Are you kidding me? But they're inviting them in. That's what I
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So in the 60 Minutes documentary, they talk to a former minister, and he's left, but he is, like, doing his own kind of ministry. But he still believes in, like, the doctrine and stuff, but he's speaking out against, like, obviously the abuse.
Right.
And he was saying the family that they were, like, focusing on, he was and the predator that they were focusing on, he worked with that guy. And they actually show the reporter going after him. Like, they go to his workplace and they're just, like, staked out outside of his office. And she goes up and talks to him, and she's like, what can you say about your, you know, these abuse allegations? What can you say? And he just, like, is this old, gross man, you know, big guy, like, huge.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no comment, no comment. And he runs back into his office, basically.
Of course, of course. Oh my God. I don't understand inviting, like, my kids always are like, we want to have a sleepover. And, like, sorry, we don't do sleepovers in our family. It's just not, it's just, you know, you can play late. The only time we sleep at somebody else's house is if we're there all together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't understand this whole concept of inviting a stranger into your mm-hmm. family home where you have, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I just.
Well, and I also think of, not to, like, justify any of it, obviously, but back when we were kids, like, sleepovers were nothing. Like, I would
sleep, they happened all the time.
I think parents are more aware of it now, obviously, which is great, because, like, don't put your kids into situations where they can be molested or
my friend had an older brother that, now looking back, I'm like, things happened to me that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
you know, like,
yeah,
so inappropriate.
And you send your kid off to somebody's house. How do you know who's even there? Do you know, like, how much do you know actually know about those people that they're staying with?
Exactly. Yeah, go play, but you're coming home at night. Like, and I'm not saying, like, abuse can happen any time of the day, but it seems especially nefarious at nighttime when you're vulnerable and sleepy and cozy, and that just seems like just inviting a bad situation.
Well, yeah, and this one, the one victim, I'm going to say survivor, the one survivor said that she, like, this guy would just, like, crawl into bed with her, you know, and, like, and she was just kind of like uncomfortable, but she didn't know what to do. Cause, like, obviously you're a child. Like, what
do you
do? You're
a child. Yeah. And you're told that these people are good people and that you're supposed to look up to them and obey them. So obviously she's not going to be like, get the hell out of my bed. You know, like, oh, I hate it so much.
So, let's see. Lynette's cousin, Laura Lee, says it's been a nightmare ever since. She said, this is my little foot and slipper, showing a photographer photograph of her alleged perpetrator. This was in the middle of the 3 years he was molesting me. She said the photo was captured the night of his engagement to another woman. He would immediately go back to sexually interacting with me. Laura Lee said he would tell my father I need to go get more wood for the fire and would make sure I would go with him. How many times would it happen? Sierra asked. It would happen about 2 times a week or more, all around the truth meetings. Laura Lee says for 3 years she didn't understand what was happening to her until she her sixth grade sex ed class. She was 13 years old. She says, I left that class and went outside, and it was the first time I realized what was happening to me. She says her parents were told at the time that time, but didn't believe her. I couldn't do school. I was out. I don't know how I got through that year. Laura Lee says she's tried reporting it 4 years later. At 17, I told them again as if they never heard. So, actually, Sherry Autry is actually one of the ones that was, I think she was in the documentary. Another former member who grew up in Visalia, south of Fresno, says her father was also a victim of abuse. Years later, Sherry Autry says she experienced it herself. So the dad, so there's also in that documentary, there's a older guy that comes up and says that he was sexually abused. So there was no, like, obviously no rhyme or reason. There's never, you know, but, like, anyway. My abuse started with a minister, Autry said. At the age of 13, she says a 28-year-old worker by this name of Steve Rose. Steve Rose is the one that they, the reporter in the 60 Minutes documentary was, they focused mainly on him. By the name of Steve Rose, molested her throughout the duration of his 2-month visit to her home. 2-month visit. So when I was first listening to this, I was like picturing them just staying there for like, the weekend or whatever, like, and then they move on. No, it's like months at a time that these people are at their houses.
Don't be coming to my house for 2 months. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. She says it happened on a nightly basis. It was regular. If you questioned him, tried to report it, what would happen? You would get gaslit profusely and accused of having a bad spirit or the devil's getting into you. How dare you question God? In 1986, Autry wrote a high school research paper claiming that Rose repeatedly told her not to tell her parents. She says he promised her, if you ever get pregnant, then I'll marry you. He said that what he was doing to me was right. Everyone in the church in public thought he was nice.
If you get pregnant, I'll marry you. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. And she wrote it in a paper and nobody even. That same year, Rose sent an apology letter to church leadership where he stated they didn't have sex, but admitted to kissing and touching Autry intimately.
You can't get pregnant from kissing.
Yeah. He wrote, I did not intend to cover this up, but I did not know how to handle it other than to leave the area and beg God to forgive me. Rose denied promising to marry Autry, adding in the email, this did not happen with anyone else. Fast forward from 1986 to April of 2023, an email was sent to members about Rose stating another allegation was made from outside the state of Minnesota. The ABC7 News I-Team tried contacting Rose to get further response, but never heard back. ABC's Kira Phillips, that's the one, this is about the documentary, tracked him down in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and it was not, this is what he says. He says, "It was not a secret amongst leadership that he had molested me," said Autry. But here's what he had to say was, "You're supposed to watch a video," but it's, he literally says nothing. He says, no comment, basically. But I loved the reporter, Kira Phillips. Like, she is, you could tell she is determined to take this thing down. Yeah. So I think, and she was, she would not let him go. Like, she was like, she's like blocking him, doing this like little side thing, you know, a little bit. She's like, answer me, answer me. And she's like tiny. Yeah. Aww. She's tiny. And there's this big guy that she's like up against, you know, like if he turned violent, but there's a crew with her, but
yeah, of course there's a camera on him. Go for it, buddy. Yeah. Take you down, put you in jail.
Autry says 6 years later, Rose was out of the ministry, but still leading many meetings in his own home. She says she was horrified. So after the email and after like this like apology, quote unquote, he was holding
his
meetings.
Apology. Again. He's not sorry. Sorry, he got caught. What an asshole.
Yeah. Rose never faced criminal charges in this case and likely never will. They talk about in that. Kira Phillips talks about the statute of limitations and how it's like become it. It's so problematic for this case because it, there's some states that you can't. There's like no statute of limitations. Like you can come out like 60 years later and you know say that I was abused or whatever, and they will still investigate it. But there's some that have like a timeline, and so it makes it hard to get these
so many years.
Yeah,
that's why Bill Cosby, he only got caught on like one thing because of the statute of limitations on rape, which had already passed.
Yep. Why is there? Oh, we're actually gonna get to that. I didn't realize that this. I'm very professional, and I did, but I didn't realize this article gets into that. So, according to the Tulare County District Attorney's Office, prosecutors have meticulously reviewed reports and victim accounts in this case and have determined that any potential crime falls outside of California statute of limitations. We spoke with legal expert and veteran criminal defense attorney Seth Chazen. Sierra asked if this is true. He says, yes, unfortunately, the charges can't be filed in this case due to the running of the statute of limitations. Just to be clear, do either of those cases have any criminal recourse? No charges were not filed prior to the alleged victim's 40th birthday. According to a well-known anti-sexual violence organization, RAIN, only 7 states have eliminated the statute of limitations for all felony sex crimes. California is not one of them, in part because certain felony sex offenses like rape still has a statute of limitations. So the states that have limitations for sex crimes are South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Wyoming. It's so weird that they haven't gotten rid of this. Like, I just...
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It's such a huge problem. What do they do in Canada? Is there, like, a statute of limitations up there?
Oh, I'm sure there is. It's probably a provincial thing. I'm not 100% sure, but...
Let's see. We understand state lawmakers have attempted to change this. AB 2295 is simply saying there will be no statute of limitations for any child sexual assault. That's a bill. The bill is still moving through the state legislature. For now, the only law on the books is one that allows alleged victims who file a claim within 5 years or by age 40 to seek civil damages for childhood sexual assaults that occurred before 2024. So they also talk about in the documentary was that a lot of people that experience sex abuse as a child don't even like it's more common for them to come out way later because like you said, like you looking back on.
Yeah, I didn't realize it until like as an adult having my own children and being like, oh, God, no. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, I just looked it up. Alberta statute of limitations is 2 years.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that needs to be changed.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Ugh.
Both Sherry Audrey and Lori Lee Brown say there was a sense of fear that prevented them from reporting their alleged abuse at the time. It was such a symbolization of all the power and control. Do not tarnish the image of the organization. So a 2x2 worker responded. Decades later, it's unclear who exactly to hold accountable, but we tried to reach current local leadership representing the Bay Area congregation for further comment, and they never heard back. That's until we located Gary Paul, a veteran worker who's not tied to the Bay Area, but based in Washington State, North Idaho, and Alaska. He says he was not involved with Autry's or Laura Lee's cases, but we spoke with him about the broader allegations facing the ministry. He recently visited the South Bay for what's called a special meeting. These meetings only happen on rare scheduled occasions, but they're difficult to track down as the schedules aren't posted publicly, and several were reportedly shut down following pressure from the federal investigation. After preaching Sunday service in San Martin, Paul agreed to speak with us. Stephanie, so it's kind of the dialogue. I've talked with numerous former members who say they have been sexually abused by ministers while they were staying in their home. They say the abuse was going on for years. What's your response after hearing that? He says, well, I never saw it, and knowing the church leadership, I find that very difficult to believe. Yeah. Anyway, according
Marf.
To... I know, this... They show a picture of him, and he's like this old, crusty, dusty man. Anyway, according to Advocates for the Truth, an organization dedicated to helping survivors across the world, there have been reports on more than 900 alleged perpetrators that have been, as of June 10th, 2024, that have been identified by a hotline worldwide. The nonprofit says there are more than 1,500 alleged victims that have reached out for help since its inception in March last year. Autry is the former president and co-founder of this organization. So that Sherry Autry, one of the victims.
Good job for her for like getting a way to help people. Jeez.
Yeah. And It's interesting to see on that documentary. They show kind of, there's like this bit, you know how like in 2020, like there was like this big explosion of like ex-Mormon content and like that kind of, mm-hmm. and like people coming out and saying like, I don't believe in the church, or there was sexual abuse during in the church and all this stuff. That's the same thing is happening to this organization.
Good.
Recent. And yeah. They show some videos of like TikTokers coming out and saying like, yeah, there's this organization that my family was a part of and I was abused in it. And they're just coming out in droves. It's crazy to me to think that there's an organization so secretive that we don't, not a lot of people know about.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
Church, they know.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like ever since that AP article, there's a little more scrutiny over it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This one is just like so nefarious and like underhanded that they just kind of flew under the radar.
It's like the nefarious part of like I've had personal revelation, but an entire like mm-hmm. religion built around that, because like, you know, these men have no oversight. There's nobody sending them like, you know, manuals to teach from. It's just, it's the worst of the worst.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, the FBI is now investigating your church. This is back to the, she's interviewing that guy, Gary. How do you feel about that? He says, I don't think it's necessary, but they're doing it, so that's fine. I don't think they'll find anything they don't expect.
Oh. They don't. Yeah, they expect to find a lot of covered up child abuse. Yeah.
Yeah. And she says, you don't think that's necessary. Why? Because I don't think that there's a cult of people trying to hide things. The leadership is not super secret and trying to hide things. I don't know what they're after.
They're not, they don't have a name, sir. Oh, we're not secretive. You don't have that. You're the nameless. Yeah. Oh my God.
Right. It's so crazy. And the amount of, like, you think of how like brainwashed the Mormon church is. These people like are on a different level because they just are so like.
You're not secretive. What's the name of your church? It doesn't have one.
Oh, creepy. She says there are hundreds of alleged victims that have come out indicating they were abused at one point or another, many of whom have come out publicly to share their stories. because the allegations were made, don't you think it's important an investigation is done to fully vet what happened? And he says, I suppose it would be.
I suppose it. Oh, my God. Dude.
After 57 years in the ministry, Paul says he never dealt with a child sex assault case, nor received formal training on how to respond to such allegations until after the federal investigation began.
Of course you're not going to do they receive formal training on how to even, like, teach in the church? Like, this is what
Yeah. Just to be clear, she says, is that training just voluntary or required now? And he says, voluntary. Don't you think it should be required? I think it should be voluntary. We don't commonly talk about problems that are exposed. Like, he's talking about, he's telling on himself so much.
You said the quiet thing out loud, sir.
Yeah. Would you consider this ministry to be secretive? He says, no, we're definitely not. But some of those who grew up in it disagree. Ex-member Michael Day says he experienced that firsthand. Is there a culture within this religious sect that encourages sweeping things under the rug? Uncomfortable topics, yes, Day said. Day grew up in the religious sect with his cousin John Vandenberg, a Hayward native. Before Vandenberg died this year, some leaders within the ministry say he faced serious allegations of sexual abuse. It made me very, very sad, Day said. He was on a missionary trip to the Western Pacific. When he was coming back, the overseer told him that he couldn't be a worker anymore, so he was kicked out. Day says he was shocked. Vandenberg was like a brother to him. I've heard inappropriate touching of girls in the Philippines and in Mexico, but it's just hearsay, said Day. An email from a regional leader in the sex ministry reported Vandenberg was the subject of several credible allegations of unacceptable sexual behavior, including a complaint of inappropriate touching of a minor, which was reported to the authorities. So this was the guy. They showed him, like, he was just such a, like, a creepy old man looking. Anyway, like, you really don't think that he's sex abused children? Like, look at him. It's not to judge people by their looks, but, you know, like, come on. I feel really bad, especially if they feel violated, said Day. Day says he had 35 ministers or workers stay at his home growing up. One of them, who John knew and who stayed in our home, later came out as a convicted child molester, and he had been in our home, and we couldn't believe it. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. In the years that followed, Day says he grew out of the faith and was displeased with the hypocrisy. I would hear there are no rules. We have no rules. God's going to lay his faith in you, and you will know what to do. It's right. Day said before shaking his head. Yeah, there's rules. There's rules galore. Former members say the ministry frowned upon makeup, jewelry other than a wedding ring, cutting your hair, adorning yourself, and expected women to wear conservative clothes, particularly dresses. Notice how it's not anything about the men.
No, of course not. Of course, it's always us Jezebels.
Yeah. The reporter asks, what happens if you wear pants? Oh, you would be looked at like, what are you wearing? Why are you wearing that? They would shun you. We asked Gary Paul, which, I mean, meant the whole pants thing, pants movement, yeah, in the Mormon church.
God forbid people know you have two separate legs. Oh my right. God.
She says, we asked Gary Paul about that, but he denied any rules about makeup. What about wearing pants to Sunday service? I don't feel that's very womanly. There are times when it's really not becoming or womanly to wear pants. Not womanly to wear pants nor go to college, according to Laura Lee Brown. She says she wanted to be an attorney, but was told by the ministry, that's too worldly. We don't think you should do that.
Oh, my God.
A religion with a strong set of rules that preaches they are destined to find the truth or the one true way, but questions linger as to who is really being honest. We were told that the way is perfect, but the people are not. So that's not...
That sounds familiar. Yeah, perfect, but people aren't.
Oh God, I hate that. Some former members argue the way is far from perfect, raising concerns about ministers having access to young children by moving from home to home. There's no accountability when you go and try and talk to them. They refuse to try and talk to you about it. They just ignore you. They deny it. They asked Gary Paul, the old man, about it. Some former members believe there should be rules in place prohibiting ministers from staying in people's homes, arguing that would help protect innocent children from potentially being exposed to predatory behavior. Do you agree with that? Does he guess what he says? No.
Of course
nowhere
not.
In the scripture supports that, and in the multitude of years that I've been in it, it's never been a problem. How do you know it hasn't been a problem? Well, it's never been a problem that I'm aware of. Obviously, it could have been, but I wasn't aware of it, and I never saw it. She says, just because you weren't aware of it, don't you see value in protecting future generations, given what has been publicly revealed? He says, I don't think that it would. I think it would affect the quality of our ministry and the standard of the ministry that has been established from New Testament days. We've always stayed in the home of God's people. Staying in home makes you very vulnerable. It's true that the children in the family home are vulnerable also, but that's the way that this fellowship has been established. From your perspective, what will it take to see real change from all this? Well, I don't like the word change. No shit. Because there's a lot of things about the fellowship that cannot change. You can't do that. Members of the ministry conflict with former members, yet both are on missions to seek the truth. The question is, will it bring justice? The FBI Omaha field office is seeking the public's help identifying victims or individuals with knowledge of abuse and or criminal behavior that has occurred within this religious group. So that's currently under investigation, by the FBI, which is awesome. Good. That they're actually taking it seriously, and these victims will finally get some justice. The ABC News Nightline investigation is called Secrets of the 2x2 Church, and it's now on Hulu, if you have that. But I'm sure you can get it other places. But it's an hour long, but it's so good, so well done. They go into the history of the church a little bit, but there's honestly, like I said, even in that investigation report, there's not a whole lot that you can say about it. Even the members are just kind of the former members are like, well, it's just like a religion. It's just kind of there,
So wild to me.
When we think of church, we think of a building. We think of structure. We think of Mormon church is heavily structured, this is very similar teachings, but then very opposite. And also the sex abuse is very common, a common thread among all these churches, these weird churches. And it's like we've talked about before, it's just these vulnerable people that end up in these situations, and they let it happen because they're men of God that are doing it. Yep. So,
oh my God, that makes me so crazy. I just can't even. It makes me insane. Poor kids.
I don't know. Well, hopefully they can take them down. But anyway, that was the 2x2s.
That was amazing that I've never heard of such a thing. And now I'm enraged about something else that exists in the world. So thanks You're for welcome. That. That was, yay.
I do what I can. well, it was kind of a rocky start, but because we were
struggled, but we're here.
We made it. We made it through. And anyway.
Well, thanks for all the, that's incredible that you found something I know nothing about. I mean, I know a lot of nothings, but
I'm trying. That's why I'm so giddy that you had not heard about them.
It just sounds so similar to the Duggars and those kinds of people that have these unregulated, they go off of what's his name? Gottfried, his teachings. What's his name? I don't know. The dude with the thing. Anyways. it just feels like religious is such a prime place for abuse to happen, and then when there's no oversight, it's just even more prime for Pat had a relative that wanted to come stay with us for a weekend, a single male relative, and I was like, no, you can get an Airbnb or a hotel room, you are not coming into my home with my children, sorry. I'm so protective of my children's safe space that I cannot imagine this strange man just coming and staying for 2 months and just being like,
and
yeah.
And letting them sleep in your same room with your children.
Yeah. Like, that's a hard pass.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, and you think about, I keep thinking of, like, the home teachers, like, in the, you know, growing up in the church, it's like, oh, you just let these people, your neighbors, supposedly good people, there's a lot of stuff that could be happening there, but I'm just like, but they're not sleeping over.
No, they're only there for like an hour or maybe an hour and a half or longer if you're my family, because we had a really old couch and we had really old home teachers and they struggled to get up off of it, so.
Or like me when I was a priest.
Probably, yeah.
And I was I was home teaching, and I would like be falling asleep. I was so bored because my companion would be just my way.
The amount my parents were like big missionary, whatever, I don't even know what it's called. But the missionaries would be at our house a lot, and like they would always fall asleep on our couch. My dad would be like, it's fine, just let them sleep for a while. We just like go about our lives as like passed out teenagers in our room. Come home from stuff and be like, okay, guess I'll go downstairs. Wild.